SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, coming up on 20 into the hour, actually, and Tony Black swings in, and Tony, here it is, the big year end. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas to you and the extended family.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Happy holidays to you and to all the listeners. It's been a year of ups and downs, and I heard part of the show earlier while I was getting on horses. I kept the cell phone in my pocket listening to you, and we were talking about the people that we lost this year, and there's been so many. But you know what? Be grateful for being here and still being able to come out to the track or go to the track as a fan or a spectator and enjoying the beautiful sport of horse racing. I enjoy it. Even though I don't know what I am, if I'm a jockey, exercise boy, if I'm just a good weather rider, but you know how I said when it gets real cold, I'm not going to be getting on horses in the morning. Well, I miss the morning, and I'm wondering what the definition for a 67-year-old cold is. Because I got on 5 this morning, I caught bits and pieces of the show because I keep the cell phone in my pocket. And I keep you on as loud as I can hear it. I don't have the earbuds like a dummy. You know, I'm low tech. But I enjoy listening to the show while I'm getting horses around there. And, you know, I breezed 5 this morning, and I saved the best for last. And the track was acceptable, you know. The track was deep, had a little moisture in it after the break, not a lot. It was the kind of track, if you worked the horse 5/8 and 4, they went good. If they went 2, they went exceptionally well, and if you went faster than 2, you were just an amazingly good horse. I saved the last one, my favorite horse of a long time, Collegeville Girl. I worked her 5/8 from the pole, sweating 101, just breaking sticks, full of run, galloping out. She's over from all her sickness, and she's doing just tremendous. I can't wait till she gets a chance to run and show herself. Because, of course, we all were disappointed in her last race, but she was sick the next day it shows. The Collegeville Girl went 101, just a fabulous work and just a nice horse.
Excellent. And I love hearing it, waiting for her to come back. And, you know, there was the opportunity last week. Actually, I'm trying to think. I forget, who's she by? I think she's a New York bred, but I don't think she's by a New York sire. So I don't think she would have qualified for that Sire Series opportunity on Saturday. But there'll be plenty more, not to mention, you know, open company opportunities, you know, down there or at Laurel. So we'll be watching for her to come back soon. And, you know, Tony, when you bring up the work, and you said from the pole, and yesterday had a conversation with Dave Siegel from Trackmaster. I don't know if you heard any of it, about this pilot system they're installing, and they're going to clearly expand that would basically automatically time horses on their works. And the best part is it wouldn't just be from a certain start point, 3 furlongs, 4 furlongs, 5. It would basically provide information, data, for the horse's entire work. And what's fascinating about that is you could see, you know, how fast the horse was going before it broke off, and then you could see the gallop out and you know, 12 and 2, 13 and 3, 14 flat. You could see how a horse really may have worked 6 or 7 furlongs in essence, as opposed to 3 or 4.
Absolutely. You know, the gallop out is so important because that shows you the endurance of the horse. You know, a horse works 5/8 and then they get to the wire. Maybe they relax some of them. Maybe some of them just give it up, and maybe some of them are exhausted. And you can judge that by looking at the horse, the way he's moving, you know, what the rider's doing on their back. Is he restraining them? Is the horse's ears pricking and she's pulling up because she knows where the wire is? Or is she exhausted and she's just had enough and that's why she went in 101 in the next eighth instead of galloping out, you know, in 13, 14, she went in 15, 16 and was pulling up. That's important information. The gallop out is at times as important as the work. Because, like I said, it shows fitness and endurance.
Tony, explain, and go ahead, and if you have a preference, I'm curious, too. You know, there's plenty of trainers that don't necessarily want to work wire, you know, from pole to wire, for just the reason you said, because of the relaxation coming to the wire, you know, the horse senses that the work is finishing. What about, you know, what is your preference, and what do you see from horses if they work, you know, an offset distance, meaning, you know, that the work starts at a much different point, and it might also be a work that is designed to go around both turns.
Right. You know, I kind of am old school, and the way we used to do it, you know, you broke off at the pole and you worked to the wire. But you're right. There's a lot of trainers that have adopted a little different theory and a little different way of doing it. And Richie does it both ways. We alternate it, depending on what the horse. Like, I worked a few horses a half mile this morning. He says, work them from the 3/8 pole to the 7/8 pole. The half mile, you know, it's an eighth of a mile past the wire. And it gets a horse out of that habit of clocking the wire and the jock getting up and scalloping out and them relaxing. It makes them work past the wire. And a lot of young horses, I think, you know, when you get them in the latter stages of fitness, work them past the wire so they don't get tuned into, well, here's the wire, I can pull up. You know, you horses are creatures of habit. The way you teach them things is repeatedly perform the same act. That's what horses learn from. Repetition. Repetition, repetition. You learn from that. You know, you they don't just go out there once and do everything right. You know, and you get the exception, you know, that does exactly what you want every time you want them to do it. And, you know, that they're not tuned in just to one act. I think they're the more intelligent horses. You know what I like to keep an eye on with horses in the morning? And I didn't always do it in the afternoon because, you know, you ride various different kinds of horses. In the morning, I want them to use their leads properly because if they're using their leads properly in the morning, chances are they'll use them properly in the afternoon. But that's when you're talking about young horses. When you're talking about horses that are of an age that have developed little, you know, nagging problems, I never focused on them in the afternoon. If a horse came down the stretch and he didn't want to change leads, you know what? Maybe he's smarter than I am. He knows how to change them. But he's got some little nagging problems that he's more comfortable on this lead or that lead. Leave him alone. You know the other thing that you do in the afternoon when it comes to leads? Riders don't always pay attention what lead they are on earlier in the early stages of the race because you're looking to jockey for position. Let's say a mile 16th race, you leave the gate, you know, you're on your right lead leaving the gate at the 16th pole, you know, you're trying to get position, you go around the first turn, you're on the right lead, you didn't change leads, right? Because you were jockeying for position, you weren't cueing in on that, oh, I got to get him on his left lead around the turn. So he goes around the first turn, which horses can run slower around the turn, easy on a right lead and still maintain position, and you got the position you want. You go all the way down the backside on your right lead. You went from the 16th pole around the first turn on your right lead. You went all the way to the 3/8 pole on your right lead. Then you changed them, made them change leads at the 3/8 pole. A lot of times you do that because, you know, you're more tuned in to get, you have position and you want to focus and fire at the horse in front of you. So you make him change leads, get him around the turn comfortable. Well, you tell me what his fresh lead is when he hits the head of the stretch. He ran most of the race on his right lead. He ran an 3/16 of a mile on his left lead. When you come down the stretch, why is it imperative to change back to your right lead, the lead that you use mostly through the stretch? Horses are running straight. Of course, they can run on their left lead more comfortable and coordinated around the turn. What's the difference if they're running straight and they're going to use the left lead for 3/16 of a mile or an eighth of a mile? Let them run up the stretch on their left lead. But horses, like I say, are creatures of habit. You try to tune them into everything to do right in the morning, and you hope that transfers to everything they do right in the afternoon. But older horses, sometimes you leave them alone. Young horses, you do. You know, like, I make sure when I'm on horses that are two-year-olds, listen, I want you to go around the turn on your left lead. I want you to pop over your right lead at the 3/16 pole. I want you to go into the 7/8 pole, purple, pop over to your left lead, go down the backside somewhere, and change to your right lead. That's where leads kind of is a misconception. Oh, that horse is on his wrong lead through the lane. It kind of tickles me when commentators, you know, when I listen to you say that. Well, what lead was he on throughout the race? That's what you should cue in on. What's his fresh lead through the lane? But I guess that's a different subject than what you brought me into. But that's one of those pet peeve subjects that I like to really clarify to the betting public.
No, it means a lot. And as these, you know, as these data points are produced and when they become, you know, part of the scene, they're going to be, I think, a valuable addition. And you know, it's funny because yesterday with Andy, you know, Andy's not a workout guy at all. He doesn't incorporate it into his evaluation of on the handicap side of things. I love it, and I feel somewhat hampered when I am playing cards that I don't have quality workout information. It's become for me a very close to an imperative in my decision making, and it all started because of California and the availability of, you know, of the clocking services out there, where it, you know, had been an industry in the handicapping arena for ages. And when I started, you know, when I started using National Turf up against, you know,
well,
Hollywood,
Steve, you know,
and Santa Anita.
Times are very important, you know, and when we catch the right times from the pole, like you're saying, that's great technology that we're moving forward with, you know, where you can catch exact times, very accurate. The one thing that's also very important with time, you know, like we watch the horse work 5/8, we see what the gallop out was, what the quarter mile gallop out was, and we see where, you know, the horse's fitness level is. But you know what else is very important with times, and you can't replace this? So I don't want the clockers to get too worried just because technology is going to be there to catch horses by the pole. You know, I don't know exactly how it's going to work. If you have an app on your phone and you can tune into it with the pole or the app that the racetrack has, that you can watch your horse break off, you can catch the clocking from pole to pole and the gallop out. But what is very important with time, and it's just as important as time, is the person that's observing the work and evaluating how they did it. Was this horse, you know, up against the bit and pulling and kind of doing all it could do? Or was this horse working, its ears were pricking, and he was just doing it well within himself? He went fast, he went slow. How he did it is important as how fast or how slow he did it. I can remember working some good horses, and then by themselves in the morning, you couldn't get them to break 5/8 of a mile in 2 and change. You hooked them up. My Juliet, very good example of that. She'd pull herself up in the middle of the work, and you'd be galloping by the wire. You hook her up with a stake horse, that's just, I'll never forget, we hooked her up with a horse, a colt, that just won a stake. After she pulled herself up, coming down the stretch and worked like 5/8 and 5, the next time we worked, I broke her off 4 lengths behind Wing South, a stake horse. Horse just won a stake going long, and broke off 5 lengths behind him, and we went 58 and change, and I could win. She blew to him like he was a bum on the, you know, just an average horse. But that's what company does for a horse. That's what evaluating them as the individual watching them to work does. He can tell you how they work, not just how fast they work. But it's really good that racetracks are getting up with modern technology and they're installing some kind of a clocking program like that. It can be very useful. Don't just lean on it as God's word, because you want to be able to translate what they did and how they did it. That's so important.
Absolutely, and as you've said for years, I mean that you know that element, how they're going, and I made the point with Mike Welsh last Friday when it came up. Mike brought the GPS timing concept and you know the news of the expansion of the test and where they stood. He brought it up to me. You know, it's going to make things easier for clockers. They'll be able to. Right, they'll be able to just watch the horse carefully, without you know, without having to worry about the stopwatch. I mean, knowing what the splits are going to be, and I think the clockers will have a free hand to you know to really focus on what's even more important than the timing.
Yeah, really, you're absolutely right. They'll be able to watch the action of the horse, the movement of the rider, the movement of the horse, and they ain't going to be hitting it for splits because that's going to be given to them. And in doing that, they'll be able to really evaluate what the horse is doing and how he's doing it. And that's, their word or their comment on a work is going to be so important. And that's where the clocker's lifetime experience is going to show, you know, their comments on these works. It'll be so important, and it'll move the industry forward when it comes to clockers and clocking horses. It'll be a good move. Good move.
Well, Tony, we're going to move to talk to Steve Haskin and get his year-end thoughts, some final 2018 from you, if you would.
Well, you know, I was listening to the show earlier, and like we said, we lost so many good horsemen and people that were involved in the horse racing business. It's wonderful to have had contact with many of those people, and the business certainly has lost some talented individuals, but it's still a great business, and there'll be new faces and new people come along and new jockeys coming along to replace the Tony Blacks and, you know, and all the other ones that have been out there. I just want the people to know the way I feel about things. You know, when it comes to being thankful, I'm so grateful I was introduced to this business, and I always look at what I have as most important things, and health and children, and not what I want, you know. It's so important, our health and our well-being. That's what life's all about. Live a good life. Enjoy your family. Enjoy the holiday. And if you get a chance, come enjoy horse racing. It's a great sport. And one quick thing I want to say. I was at the commission meeting in Pennsylvania the other day, and they made a video. And the video was about the health and well-being and the care that these horses are given. And I said, man, the business needs to be able to show those videos that show the care of the horse and what the horse is really exposed to, not just what people want to say with these horses. And I'm going to be a representative of horse racing at the Pennsylvania Farm Show at the Agricultural Building in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I hope to show that video of the health and well-being and the care of these horses. The public deserves to know what we really do with these animals. So I was glad to see that they put a video together. And come this January 7th to the 11th, it's the farm show in the Agricultural Building at Harrisburg. If you want to come see me, I'll be there.
Nice. You did that. You did that last year. Tony, we'll also send out thoughts and best wishes for the Flores family, of course, for the boys and Jose's widow, and there that really, when I was making some notes last night, that stuck with me, and knew you'd want to, you know.
She's on her way to Ireland with the loved one, and you know, my heart goes out there. I just saw her a few days ago, and she's a strong person, Joanne McDade Flores. God bless you and the family, the kids, and you take care, enjoy the family in Ireland the best you can, and our hearts go out to you, and we won't get over the loss of such a good competitor and person, Jose Flores. Loved him, missed him, never forget him.
nicely said. Tony, thanks for everything. We'll talk in a few weeks. Merry, Merry Christmas. Love you.
Take care. Happy holidays, Steve. Love you. I love you, Steve. You know that. Keep up the good work. I appreciate it. Vic, I love you, Vic.
Love you, Tony. And we love Nikki Santagata. We got to get we got to throw in Nikki, too, right?
Nikki Santagata. I always call Nikki Santagata. I love you, Nikki.
The best. I love it. Tony, talk in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
He's the best, Tony Black. So many people, when you know we're out and about, and they talk about the show and listening, my favorite's Tony Black. They love him. Let's take a break, a little past the bottom of the hour, and we'll catch up with Steve Haskin and get Steve's year-end thoughts. I think I want Steve to address some of the bashing of the Triple Crown that has gone on here the last couple of weeks. It's a very strange phenomena. Steve Haskin next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrisNet.com/APR. The BrisNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrisNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrisNet.com is the handicapper's edge. $275 per year and is available at BrisNet.com/APR. The BrisNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrisNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrisNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You talk about Santa Claus, you want to know what it's all about. Santa Claus got drunk last night. Everybody tried to throw him out. But I want to tell you, folks, how it all began. Santa stopped at a neighbor's house and started drinking good gin. Now while I was with him, I named a few. I love to name some of them whiskeys that Santa was drinking to you. It was way back in the 1880, down in Mid Spring Valley, where the crab tree grows. Old granddaddy bought a rocking chair for Mr. Boston. One day we're rocking in the mellow breeze. The rocking chair broke and threw him bottom up. He jumped up thinking about his old drum. He saddled his white horse, said he's going over to Johnny Walker. He swam the three rivers, past the cabin still.
I tell you, I love this.
With Johnny Walker's.
Clyde Lasley and the Cadillac Baby Specials. Santa Claus, Santa Came Home Drunk. You see it listed a couple different ways. Santa Claus Came Home Drunk. And you know, that's a genre. Huh? I never really thought about it until you hear the lyrics of that. But the genre of the songs like one bourbon, one whiskey, one beer, and I Drink Alone. I Drink Alone actually fits that too, George Thorogood. But the genre where the lyrics feature a variety of the brands of alcohol, and that song does it. Later on, he mentions Four Roses and Old Boston, and there's a lot of songs like that. With the Steve Haskin joins us. Steve, I never thought of that, but there's a lot of songs that incorporate the brands of liquor.
I'm just happy my spot inspired that.
Although we don't think of you as a drinker.
No, and rightly so. You know, one glass of red wine and I'm gone.
You're at least two sheets to the wind, not three.
I know. Well, one sheet when it's Manischewitz or Mogan David. then I pass out after three sips of that horrible stuff.
Well, I'm gonna seek those out actually, and I've gotta find the lyrics to that because I heard at least three or four different brand names, and it made me realize that that's a whole cottage industry, songs that have liquor brands listed in.
Well, the thing is that years ago, you know, I used to help Coolmore out and do videos for them, and you know, promoting their new stallions, especially, you know, obviously the ones in the United States. So every Christmas they would send me a big carton of you know, really good champagne, and I'm not a big fan of champagne, and neither is Joan, and we try to give them away, but they just sit around all this expensive champagne and trying to figure out what to do with it. You know, we serve it at Christmas, obviously, and some people drink it at Christmas, but other than that, we really didn't have much use for champagne.
Well, you know what you could do when a favorite sports team wins, you could have your own locker room celebration at home with the champagne.
I could, except I don't have any favorite sports teams anymore. I'm just like in horse racing, Steve. I'm just an objective observer now.
Okay. Well, you.
A lot of people think I'm a diehard, you know, Cowboys fan because I picked them, which I did months ago. When they were nothing, I was picking them to. I was picking the Cowboys to meet the Steelers in the Super Bowl this year, and I put it on Facebook, and everybody thought I'm totally out of my mind, which I may very well be, but it's getting there. Now the question is, are the Eagles going to be able to back into it? It all depends on what happens with the Vikings. They're not going to win the division. Cowboys will win the division. But they still could back in with a 9-7 record and get into the playoffs with Nick Foles with Nick Foles again.
Yeah, certainly Sunday night was.
They, that
quite
was the only
entertaining.
Time I've seen them this year where they looked like the Eagles from last year.
Yeah.
Because even the games they were winning, they just didn't. They were not the same. They're not the same team. I mean, the defense didn't look good. Nothing. Their offensive line. I mean, Carson Wentz didn't look the same. They had no running attack at all. They have nothing there. They weren't using their receiver. They just didn't look like a good team until last week. And last week they looked like the Eagles of old.
Yeah, you know,
maybe because the Rams are folding. I don't know, but I mean they looked. They finally look good, and I think one of the reasons is Nick Foles has a way with Alshon Jeffrey, where Carson Wentz, he just threw to Zach Ertz every single play. He completely ignored Jeffrey, and now we're back to him as being a top receiver again, and the Eagles are they're a totally different team with Nick Foles. I don't get it. I don't know why. I mean, he's not as good as Wentz, but he rises to the occasion at this time of the year, that's for sure.
Yeah, we were texting back and forth with Johnny and Will Schwartz and I made a similar comment early on. I said this is just odd. I mean that they would be, you know, that, and Johnny talked about it Monday actually, that, you know, the team got an emotional lift to some degree with, you know, from him and listen, they've had, the lineup has been decimated. I mean, they've had 13 defensive
backs. Oh God,
backs.
Yeah. Well, they have no secondary. I mean, they're on their fourth string DBs. I mean, there's nobody back there. But except last week, they looked good. They were picking up passes.
Well,
they were breaking up passes. They were the secondary looked terrific last week.
Well, I know they're not done. They obviously got to beat Houston and the Redskins.
Well, they got to beat Houston, and you know, I think they'll beat Washington. But they have to have, somebody's got to beat the Vikings.
All right. Well, we'll
for them to get in. But I still have that gut feeling though. This is the Cowboys' year. I mean, I know they looked terrible last week, but they needed to. They needed a splash of cold water in the face. But you know, they just give the ball to Zeke more. They only gave it to him. He only carried 18 times. You realize when he carries for over 20 times, by the way, they're undefeated. They're like 8-0 in their last 8 starts. And when he's under 20, they're like 2-6 or something. So they just got to keep giving it to him. And I love their linebackers, that Leighton Van Der Esch. This is what a fine, you know, drafting this guy. You know, guy from Boise, it's incredible the way between him and Jalen Smith running around there like wild men in linebackers. I like their defense. I just got that feeling. And I don't count the Steelers out. I think the Steelers are sneaky. After winning last week.
Hammer will love hearing that. We're going to close out the season with Rick in a little bit.
I spoke to him on the phone the other day. He said he was going to be on your show. I thought he was going to be on last Friday, but I see he wasn't on.
He got hung up. He couldn't do it last Friday. But
okay, because I know he said it's time to go public.
but he's a wild-eyed Steeler fan. Steve, let me ask you a question before we get to the, you know, kind of the year end, as part of the year end discussion. I'm sure you've, you know, seen the conversations. It's a very strange scenario. We touched on it, I know, last week or the week before, but the sudden bashing of the Triple Crown, I find really quizzical. And whether it's a specific design that is part of it, I don't know. But what's your take on this? That you got people that are trying to, I don't know, pretend that the Triple Crown it has worn out its welcome somehow. I've never seen such lunacy.
First of all, it's our society. It's the way our society thinks. It's a Twitter mentality, just to go after something, be malcontent about things. But I think a lot of it is a backlash against they're blaming the Triple Crown for all these horses retiring. So I think a lot of people now feel that if a horse wins the Triple Crown, what good is it? Because when there's absolutely no shot of him running as a four-year-old, unless he's a gelding or he's got California chrome type breeding. He's a California bred that is not going to be very fashionable at stud. But if you get a horse with halfway decent breeding, wins the Triple Crown, goodbye. At least American Pharoah lasted through the Breeders' Cup Classic. But when Justified left after the Belmont Stakes, there was a tremendous backlash from that. And that's why do you think Justify did not win the Vox Populi Award? I mean, you got a Triple Crown winner, an undefeated Triple Crown winner, who did something that no horse has ever done, and in my mind, no horse will ever do again, ever, to do what he did in such a short period of time. And for the most popular horse, so the horse that resonated the most in horse racing, 80% of the voters were Americans. We're from America. So, and you give the award to a 7-year-old Australian mare? I mean, as great as Winx is, how many people have in this country have seen Winx run in the flesh? Have seen Winx at all in the flesh? And how many people have stayed up until 2 o'clock in the morning to watch her race? I mean, it's fine. I mean, if I'm sure Winx has her fan club, and there are people in the United States that are crazy about her, but to give her that award, and then if he doesn't win that award, and if he doesn't win Horse of the Year, which I think he will, but if he doesn't, you got to remember, Accelerate, for the last several weeks was the number one ranked horse on the NTRA poll. So that's the racing scribes are looking at it, and even though Accelerate had more points, Justify always had more first-place votes, but not after the Breeders' Cup. After the Breeders' Cup, it was a complete reversal, and Accelerate had like 11 or 12 more first-place votes than Justify did. So from that angle, even the media has started looking towards Accelerate, taking nothing away from the year Accelerate had. But, 20 years from now, I don't know, people are going to, you look at Accelerate like you're going to look at Gunrunner, horses like that, very, very good horses who were deserving Horse of the Years. But when you're up against a Triple Crown winner, an undefeated Triple Crown winner, who made his first start and the Belmont Stakes 112 days apart, that'll never be done again. No horse will ever be accomplished. And yet people hold that against him. They should be holding that. They should be looking at that as a positive for a horse to do what he did that had never been done. I mean, here's a horse that I think we discussed this last time, but for him to do what he did in that period of time, to do something that no horse had done, in well over 100 years, putting an end to the so-called Apollo curse. He did only two horses in the last 103 years. He's second horse in 103 years to win the Derby with three career starts. He ran the fastest winning fractions in the history of the Kentucky Derby. And to still be around to win the Belmont Stakes when in mid-February, nobody ever heard of him. And in June, he's an undefeated Triple Crown winner. And then people say, well, who did he beat? It's baloney. I mean, granted, I was expecting a lot more from Audible in the House Hope, but it was a sloppy track. I still think Audible's going to have a fantastic year. But really, when you look at Justify, Good Magic, and Audible, go back and look at the last several Kentucky Derbies and see how many 1, 2, 3 finishes were strong as those horses. I mean, you had the two-year-old champion second. You had the easy Florida Derby win the third. You had the San Anita Derby win the first. And people say, well, you know, it's cropped and nothing. Well, it's, you know, a lot of the horses from this crop got hurt. Even a horse like, they say, oh, who are you beating a Preakness? Bravazo? Well, listen, Bravazo, I know, didn't win after that, but still, you know, he placed in the Travers, and he's placing in big races.
He beat Good Magic. I mean, I don't care about Bravazo clunking up, to be honest, and tenfold.
Look what he did in his last two starts against all the horses. Finishing third, the one of the best horses in the country in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, running 133-4, and he's third in the race, runs a hell of a good race, then comes back and gets beat a half a length by a very good horse and another great one in the Clark Handicap. I mean, you don't have to win to look good. I think Bravazo proved it in the second half of the year that he was legitimate. And you have to remember, too, that Justify went head-to-head with Good Magic every step of the way in that fog race and put away a very, very good horse. And then Good Magic comes back and romps in Asco.
Yep.
So, I mean, how you can knock this crop is beyond me. But listen, I know there are people, you know, that still are very antagonistic over the fact that he was retired early. Fine. So blame Windstar, blame China Horse Club, blame whoever you blame, Coolmore, blame whoever you want to blame. Don't blame the horse. I mean, the horse did what they asked him to do. You know, he didn't retire himself. But I mean, 20 years from now, they're going to talk about Justify a lot more than they're going to talk about Accelerate.
That's a good point.
Like I said, for him to lose the Vox Populi Award to an Australian,
I don't know. The Vox Populi didn't Rapid Redux win it? I mean, to me, it's a bit of a...
Oh, yeah. I'm not talking about best toys. I'm not talking about his accomplishment.
No, I understand.
Popularity.
Yeah, but it popularity among who? I mean, it's a fan.
I'm talking about the fans.
I don't know.
Fans would embrace a Triple Crown winner more than they would embrace a 7-year-old Australian mare.
Well,
Redux. And they embraced Ben's Cat because they were popular horses that the fans embraced and fell in love with, and they should have fell in love with. Justified the way they fell in love and voted American Pharoah the award. There's no reason if American Pharoah's going to win it, why wouldn't you vote for Justify? Why? Because people were ticked off that they retired him. Pure and simple. They're tired of Baffert, they're tired of Windstar, they're tired of China Horse Club, and there's no you know, romantic feel-good story, there's no California Chrome story there. So I think people just got turned off. You know, I wrote a Thanksgiving column about giving thanks to Justify. You can't believe how many people commented saying, "Well, I'm not going to give thanks to him. Who wants to give thanks to that horse? For what? You know, hey, people just absolutely despise this horse. It's sick."
I am a little mystified too. I mean, and with it has created somehow managed to create some. You know, some discussion. Oh, how the Triple Crown is counterproductive. Oh, okay.
That's ridiculous. Look, I wrote another column earlier, by the way, basically imploring people: do not get complacent. Do not feel now all of a sudden that the Triple Crown is no big deal, because I was around when fans did that in the late 70s, and then you know if you go, turn the clock back to after the Preakness Stakes, after Spectacular Bid won the Preakness. And people were going, oh, God, he's going to be 1-20 in the Belmont. Ho-hum, he's going to win the Triple Crown again. You know, he's going to be the fourth horse to win the Triple Crown. Who cares anymore? Well, guess what, folks? You had to wait 37 years for the next one. So don't get complacent now, and don't take the Triple Crown for granted now, because we've had two winners since 2015. Because we can go another 30 years without having one, just when you start thinking that it's something that's easily done. You know, I mean, it happens. This is what history is all about. History is very cyclical, and you can't take anything for granted. Believe me, I remember when Spectacular Bid was trying for the Triple Crown. Nobody even cared anymore. They were just waiting for him to do it, because it was a foregone conclusion that the bid was going to win the Triple Crown. And then when he didn't, they said, all right, well, then what? Go through the 80s. No, I mean, how many horses even came close in the 80s? you know, and then you keep going, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. 37 years,
yep.
And now everybody's saying it can never be done. Oh, forget about it. They get rid of the Triple Crown. Nobody can do it. Then two horses do it, and now they want to get rid of the Triple Crown. You know, it's not society. It's the way people think now.
Lower the mound.
Exactly. It's the same thing. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, Lily's home run. Oh, come on. But they don't realize, by the way, is that the rules should always favor the offense, because the offense is what the people want. They want to see home runs. So then you lower the mound, and you're going to get totally different types of games. Oh yeah, no, we're not getting enough. The players stink, and nobody's doing anything now. And yeah, you know, the lead the league, and you know, average with 306 or something. And you know, everybody wants to see Ted Williams again. And you know, but I mean, it's sports are the same way. You look at look at football. You can't touch a quarterback now. And people all complain you can't touch a quarterback. But then when you get a game like a few weeks ago with Indianapolis and Jacksonville at 6-0, what a horrible game this is. Dallas and New Orleans, 13-10. Ugh, what a terrible game. Well, I mean, you can't have it both ways. What do you want? I mean, you complain that there's too much scoring, and then you complain that the low scoring games are boring. So it's the same what we're doing in horse racing now. Take your choice. What do you want? What do you want to see in sports?
No, I hear you. It's a no win. There's also the problem that no matter what is transpiring, that the reaction is the negative reaction, the backlash reaction is always going to be, you're always going to see it. So no matter what is transpiring, you are only seeing a certain response, and so it doesn't matter what direction things are actually going. You're not getting an accurate read necessarily on the true consensus. That's one of the I would say, you know, curveball aspects or even knuckleball aspects of the media landscape, or you know, the social media landscape, because you can't really gauge. You're not getting an accurate read on what the true majority of in this case horse players and stakeholders are really thinking. You're only getting the reactive voices, so it's it's hard to really know what the consensus is out there.
Yeah, and you know, the society we live in now, by the way, it's a society that no matter what you're talking about, whether it be sports, whether it be politics or anything, if one person complains about something, oh, we got to change the rules, you know, and it's, you know, the NFL. Oh, we got to change this because you know we got one person complaining about something. In business, let's say a newspaper. Let's say the Blood Horse, just to give an example. Somebody writes in, oh, how could the Blood Horse do this? You know, I mean, how could you write something about this? And all of a sudden, you know, you get a notice. Oh, no, we can't write about that anymore. So it's like the majority. One person becomes the majority that dictates all rules. And that's the way we look at it. Like one malcontent goes on Twitter and knocks something, which is probably a person who knocks everything, because that's what Twitter is all about. You know, people use anonymity as a powerful entity. And they go on there, and they knock this, they knock that, and that's what they do. So I mean, you can't pay any attention to that. You just do what you think is right, and it's just crazy. And it's, like I said, it's the same in horse racing.
Yeah. You know, Sean,
you get some people that complain about this, complain about that, And all of a sudden, it becomes like, oh, there's a national outcry.
No, right, exactly.
It's a bunch of few malcontents that are, airing.
That are squawking.
Approval about something.
Well, Sean Clancy, this wasn't last summer. It was the summer before, and I was at the office, at Sean's office, and we were talking late after the races, and they were working on the Saratoga special issue. And Sean said, who cares what they say? He said,
exactly.
Just because there's somebody sitting with a keyboard that has that's got the spare time on their hands, you have no idea necessarily if they have any real skin in the game, as they say. And what's the point of reacting to it when you have no. You have no read on what on the gravitas of where it's coming from. I mean, there are issues where input is invaluable, and frankly, just in fact yesterday, in reaction to the conversation we had regarding, I brought up the quashing of Robin Howlett and his handicapper software program with Jason Wilson and Dave Siegel, and it got a very reasonable response from people who really are have their finger on the pulse of this topic, and so there are plenty of really good discussions. There was a great discussion about last week, in fact, about the condition book and the potential for racing offices to change their approach, and Chuck Simon weighed in on it, and Chris Rossi had a ream of information that based on each condition and that to input. It was really intelligent, back and forth. So there can be a corridor of worthwhile discussion.
If it's legitimate. But I mean, no matter what you post on Twitter now, I don't care what you post. You can post on Twitter that, I'll tell you, Mother Teresa was a terrific woman. I mean, she was just wonderful. Somebody's going to write in saying,
"Well,
what? She was a fraud. Are you kidding?"
Mother
Teresa, what are you, out of your mind?
You picked
fraud. There's always going to be somebody that can do that, no matter what.
She's a lightning rod. She's a lightning rod for criticism. So you're not wrong. That was not a bad selection.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. There is nothing you can post on Twitter where you're not going to get somebody to come out, by the way, and say, "Oh, you're crazy."
Steve,
that's the world we live in. But he's getting back to the original thing. It definitely applies to the Triple Crown. People don't know. I'll narrow it down to racing fans. Racing fans don't know what's good at the time. You know what I mean? Because they're going to find something negative in everything. They don't appreciate what they have. Listen, I've been around for racing back in the '60s, in the '70s. I love the way racing was back then. It's a totally different sport now. You do accept it. Did I like the sport better then? Yeah, in many ways I did. In some ways, I like some of the things today that are better, but you have different standards now. You have different standards, and you're not going to get as many of the Listen, you can call a lot of people come out and say, "Oh, this is a great horse." I mean, all right, maybe a horse will do great things, but there's a difference between a great horse and an all-time great horse. And when you're looking at the all-time greats, and I'll go back to the '60s, like Dr. Fager and Kelso, and go back Secretary and Forgo in the '70s and Affirm. Those were all-time greats. If you make a list of the greatest horses of all time, they're going to be in the top 20 in that high echelon. Nowadays, you get horses that you can call great if you want, but they're not going to be ranked among the top 20 horses of all time. I mean, some people might make a case for American Pharoah if they want, but it's very rare. I mean, how many horses nowadays you find? So you just have to accept it. We have horses that have displayed greatness and horses that have done great things, but most of the horses aren't around long enough to be considered all-time greats because we had different standards back then. You know, we had weight. We had horses racing 30, 40, 50, 60 times. Now you're weighing greatness by what the horse did in anywhere from 8 to 12 starts. So, you know, you look at a horse like Gosapper. I mean, Gosapper, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame, and Gosapper obviously was a great horse. The things he did were great, but who's gonna think of Gosapper among the all-time great horses? It's just not going to happen anymore. So you just accept the sport for what it is and appreciate things when they happen. So if Justify is only going to come around for 8 starts and did what he did, well, appreciate what he did. And is it bad for the sport, or are you sad that he retired early? Yes, but there's nothing you could do about it. Because back then, you know, if a horse was syndicated for $1 million, that was a lot. If a horse earned $1 million, that was, you know, I remember when Damascus, the Brooklyn Handicap, and he became like the 7th millionaire in history with $1 million. Now, you know, earnings don't mean anything anymore. You can't go by earnings. It just doesn't matter, right? When you have 14, 13, 12 million dollar races, what do earnings mean? They don't mean anything. You can get a terrible field in the Pegasus, and they're going to give away gobs of money. But you just accept it. You just accept it for what it is and appreciate horses as long as they last. And you can complain when they retire too soon. Sure. But, I mean, don't hold it against the horse.
Well, Steve, we gotta wind down and get in some final 2018 thoughts and reaction and best wishes and so forth. So the floor is yours to wish everybody a pleasant Christmas and a happy, healthy 2019.
Well, first off, I'm looking forward to tomorrow when my 10-month-old grandson comes to visit for a week.
So nice.
That's going to be a lot of fun. So obviously, looking forward to that. But, you know, I just wanted to basically wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday. And once again, listen, appreciate what we have for the sport. Don't take anything for granted, because you never know when you're not going to see anything like that again. And we're looking forward to another great year of 3 dozen. It's going to be interesting sorting everything out. Who knows? Maybe by the time I stop Derby Dust, I can have 12 horses trained by Bob Baffert. So then it'll make things easy for me. But that's, you know, it's just, it's a great sport. And everybody will have a wonderful, happy holiday and a happy new year.
Well, I appreciate the input and the mirth and everything that you bring to it, Steve, and another wonderful season here for listeners, and they love your.
Well, you just keep growing every year. You know, you become racing's vagabond. I mean, you're everywhere. You've become the most ubiquitous presence in in horse racing. Never know you're going to find Steve Vick. So the whole country is whole country gets to see you live now at some point. But you know, your show has expanded. I remember the very, very early days and where it's come in not a long period of time. So you know what you've built, the reputation you've built has been incredible. And, you know, now, listen, I remember when you had to go out and try and recruit people to come on the show, and now it's an honor to be on the show, and everybody wants to come on from every walk of horse racing life. So I think you should take great pride in what you've accomplished.
That's very kind. It's a privilege for me to do this 5 days a week. And
I still don't know how you do it. Congratulations, anyway.
Thank you, buddy. Steven, I appreciate it, and enjoy the time with the baby. And we're looking forward to video and photos. And
oh yeah.
All right. And we will talk. We'll talk in 2 weeks.
Okay, Steve. You have a happy holiday.
Thanks so much. Steve Askin, everybody. Along with Tony and with Rich Eng, who's going to join us next. The Thursday lineup that has been unchanged. The only thing that changed was the order, because when we used to be in an afternoon show, it was flip-flopped, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Haskin was always in the middle, but Rich used to be early, and then Steve, and then Tony. I'm pretty sure that, and then we flopped it because of the West Coast, you know, Rich being in Vegas. But other than that, the three regulars on Thursday have been unchanged for the 13 seasons at the races. We'll take a break. Rich next, and then Hammer will be our last guest, quote unquote. Not even guest; he's a regular. Hammer will close it out, and then Casey and I'll send everybody out into the holiday before we get off the air for this Thursday, our last show of 2018. Back after this with Rich.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.